there's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
The NBA playoffs are here, and we all know playoff mode is a thing. Listen to the evidence. Playoff crowds are going wild. Playoff players are lighting up the court. Even your speakers are in playoff mode. Okay, we'll take it down a notch, but just a notch, because this is the Turn It Up to 11 NBA playoffs. Playoff mode is clearly a thing. The NBA playoffs presented by Google Pixel continue on ABC, ESPN, TNT, and NBA TV.
Welcome to the Fantasy Footballers DFS and Betting Podcast with your hosts, Kyle Borgannoni and Matthew Betts.
What's up, fools? It's the Fantasy Footballers DFS and Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Borgannoni, and I am joined, as always, by Matthew. Dude, we're twinning bets.
Caught me off guard there, man. The what's up, fools intro is not something that you normally do. So I take it you're feeling a little feisty on this this Friday here after this week.
I am feeling a little feisty. It's my birthday this weekend. So I'm excited about that, some family stuff. And then, yeah, I'm feeling the vibes, man, that you and I, you know, we didn't text each other this morning and say, hey, let's wear the same thing. That would be very middle school of us, be very Abercrombie and Fitch of us to say, hey, let's wear the same exact thing. But we are wearing the same throwback footballer shirt right now.
Yeah, throwing it back to 2019, the live tour shirt. Didn't plan that. So that's just tells you kind of what the wardrobe looks like these days. I mean, it's sports shirt after sports shirt. And my wife makes fun of me because a lot of the stuff I have is from like college, high school. I'm like, I can't get rid of that. Like, I know it has two stains. I know it has three holes, but like, that's my shirt from, and then, you know, an event that happened or something. I'm like, I need that shirt. So it's funny that we wore the same, but fortunately this is an audio only show. So it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah. Yeah. This is great for podcasting. It is the wardrobe of choice for the middle-aged man that is obsessed about fake sports.
A fantasy footballer's t-shirt. That's the choice, right? Yeah.
But I was just thinking, like, my wardrobe is half King Griffey Jr. shirts, half Mighty Ducks, half Atlanta Braves, Falcons, and a plethora of other, you know, random. Like, I was wearing a Justin Fields yesterday. I was actually thinking, like, I could wear most teams. Like, I have a Justin Jefferson shirt. I have a Nick Chubb shirt. So it's like, am I a child or am I just a man who likes talking about football? I don't know. Is it both?
I think it's both. It sounds like you may dress the same as your sons, which is incredible.
That is. So Houston, he has a Justin Herbert shirt that he was wearing. He has a LeBron shirt as well. He just kind of sorts through it. So that's what I like. My mom asked me for my birthday what I wanted, and I gave a pretty simple answer that I give her every year. Like, okay, there's a couple hats. There's a t-shirt, so there's a King Griffey Jr. t-shirt I asked for. And then, this is for you, Betts. You've seen those NBA Jam type shirts where it's like the two players. So I went with an NFL Jam one, and it's Lamar and Mark Andrews. I just thought, like, let's go for it.
Oh, that's awesome. Aren't those, what's the site that those are on again?
Homage is one of them.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. Not a sponsor. Could be a sponsor. If they want to be. But those shirts are so cool, man. So when you get it, you have to let me know because I might have to get something different. There's an Eagles one that I saw last year that was really good with Jalen Hurts and AJ Brown that was pretty sweet. But that would be really fun to get a stack. Like, what if your most biggest exposure best ball stack? That's the t-shirt you get for the year for all the listeners.
That would be awesome. I will say that, not a sponsor, but I probably should just do a direct deposit. Because that's like from my paycheck to that site, because they kill it. They have so many different great ones. They have a lot of great Mighty Ducks ones. Anyway, not a sponsor, but on this show, we're going to be talking best ball. We're going to get some listener questions, hop in the mailbag. But we also could have a special segment today. We're going to get to interview somebody. We have a couple interviews coming up before the season, including a tease, a big one coming up in a couple weeks. That's all I'll say. Big interview for DFS and betting. But this week, we will be talking to Papa Josh, who is our community manager, our social support, our Discord lord. So a lot of all our content comes from the Discord. And one of the things I wanted to talk to Josh about was best ball, because he was a new player and he progressed so much last year, including in one of the puppies, he made it to the finals. So it's great to hear that. And so you'll get to hear that interview coming up in just a second. Betts, you kind of got to clown on Josh a lot last year in a couple of drafts on one player.
Yeah, and I kind of feel bad in hindsight, but last year on the live show, I infamously may have said the words, KJ Hamler was the worst pick in the draft. Josh, tell me you're not reading the injury report section in the UDK without telling me you're reading it, because KJ Hamler was coming off of a very significant hip injury in addition to the ACL. And in there, I was like, I just don't see how he gets back to form. And I think Josh took him in like the 14th round or something like that, which is not a huge opportunity cost, but in best ball matters. And so what's hilarious about this is I actually had a reminder in Slack set up for every like 3 weeks or so in the season. And the Slack reminder just said, make fun of Josh for KJ Hamler pick. And so I would message him like monthly being like, hey man, how's that team doing with KJ Hamler? And then at the end of the year, it was funny because he could look back on it and be like, well, Betts, not great. But I did get a team through to the puppy final, so I think things are working out for me. So good times. The best part of fantasy, in my opinion, is, in addition to having the good player takes and winning and stuff, is making fun of your friends. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. In best ball, you can take a victory lap after week one, after week two, week three. One of the things I got to tell Josh is like, hey, it's fun to check in on best ball. Just it really, I don't start really looking until like week 12 or 13 of like, okay, is this team still alive? So, you know, it's really fun to start saying, I see it all the time right now. People are already victory lapping like, you know, Leonard Fournette takes. He hasn't even signed as of this recording. So it's like, hey, just wait a second. It's best ball. It's a fun format, but we'll get to have that interview with Josh in just a second. If you want to follow Betts, you can do that at Fantasy PT. I'm at Kyle_Borg. And if you want to leave a review on Apple or Spotify, we did a contest this past week. We're going to give away a t-shirt and Betts. I'm going to let you read a review of someone that got to give one of them.
I would love to. Yes, this is from Kiwi3Y. So I guess this person will reach out to you or me on Twitter and we'll get them hooked up with a t-shirt. It says, are you a degenerate firing up multiple best ball drafts a week after the Super Bowl? Have your friends requested medical help because you're placing team over-unders months before the NFL draft? If so, the Fantasy Footballers DFS and Betting podcast is for you. Kyle Hemsworth Borgononi and Matthew, my last name is perfect for the show, Betts, will drop a new episode every Friday throughout the year to feed your fantasy football addiction. They will tell you which player has better odds of higher advance rates between Arthur Juan Brown Sr. and Keenan Alexander Allen. They will give you advice on mispriced markets, like Lamar Demetrius Jackson Jr. having the same odds as Coleridge Bernard Stroud IV for leading the league in touchdowns. Kyle and Matthew mixing their sage fantasy advice with humor and a dash of real world to create a show that is both entertaining and will help you make money. Give this podcast a shot. I guarantee over time it will hold a special place in your heart like Terrace Marshall Jr. does in Kyle's.
There are so many references in here.
Oh, it was perfect.
That brought me joy. But I think the one that I feel most known about is how much I love players' middle names. Like, I have a spreadsheet going that is just every middle name of every single player in the league. And some players, you know, don't have middle names. Like J.K. Dobbins, you're like, oh, what's is the no, it's Jacalyn. That's his first name, and that's it. So to throw in a bunch of middle names, to get a Keenan Allen, to get a Terrence Marshall Jr. and a Hemsworth reference, I mean, that's, and even fantasy football advice from a certified PT and one sick individual is the way that they titled it. I mean, they knocked it out of the park, right?
It was so good. When I saw it, I definitely chuckled to myself when I read it. So this was a great review, and we appreciate all the ones we got for sure. We'll have to keep going through these and keep picking out a couple more, maybe give away a hat, another t-shirt, something like that. So we really do appreciate it. It helps out the show a ton.
Yeah, I appreciate it a lot, guys. All right, let's get into that interview.
You talking to me?
All right. Here on the Fantasy Footballers DFS Embedding Podcast, we have a special interview today, and so special that we got to use a drop we usually reserve for NFL player interviews only, but I'm here joined by Papa Josh, Josh Liebman, part of our Fantasy Footballers team. And Josh, I'm going to run through some of your titles here, and I want you to respond. But first, I'm glad to have you, dude.
Dude, I am so stoked to be on this show right now, Kyle.
I feel like it's been a long time coming, and I'll explain why to the people. But Josh, you're a community manager, social support for us fantasy footballers. So what does that mean in footballers' world?
I do a little bit of everything. I'm like the jack of all trades, master of none, basically. So, yeah, I mean, we could spend 10 minutes going over all the different titles and things that I do around here, but all of them super important, Kyle.
Yes. And if usually when people have a question, they're talking to Papa Josh somewhere, whether it's emails. So there's a certain part of the year where Josh gets thousands and thousands of emails of people saying UDK this at the beginning of the season. So Josh gets to answer a lot of those. And I'll also add, you are Discord Lord. You're Lord of the Discord.
Absolutely. So, some would say Emperor.
Oh, I haven't crowned you that yet, but we'll talk about. So a lot of our users get to experience, you know, best ball, DFS props, some of our channels. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. But that's where a lot of, I think, action for our podcast and a lot of our listener questions that we answer today come from. But I need to add, you are also a Dynasty League champion, my friend.
I am indeed the current reigning Dynasty League champion, Kyle.
I think that maybe Andy, Mike, and Jason don't realize that. So how often do you bring that up to them in their from their league?
I'm one of those humble champions. I like to be underestimated, to be honest. You know, like, they don't ever think about it. And then when they're talking about it, they're like, oh, wait, Josh is the champion right now. And I just smile and nod.
Josh, you also get to host your own podcast, the Multiplayer Podcast. I wanted to throw that out there. Just quickly give a shout out to that and how long you've been doing that and the fun you get to have with that podcast.
Yeah, I love it. It's if you're a gamer, check it out. But yeah, I've been a lifelong gamer, man. It's just one of my hobbies, and we have a lot of fun with it.
I also, maybe people don't know this about you, but this is a big part of your life. You are actually Andy's brother-in-law. So maybe explain how that works, the good and the bad, which I know you guys are brothers. So, but also, maybe something people don't know about Andy, because they only get to hear about him or see him on YouTube, but you know, something they don't know about Andy.
Oh, I mean, Andy is, he's kind of face value, man. He's a phenomenal dude. He's kind of what everybody hears, man. He's a big gamer like me. Maybe a lot of people don't know that, but Andy and I are definitely gaming buddies. It is definitely one of his passions that he has that I don't think makes it out there all the time.
Yeah, you guys are Rocket League bros, which I don't play. Yeah. My brother plays, so you guys are pretty good. What level are you guys at right now?
Champion one.
Okay. I don't even know what that means, but I think it's good.
Just understand the champion part, Kyle.
Okay, gotcha. And then here's the part that we're going to interview on this show and kind of talk about. We're going to talk about best ball and how your journey went from not playing it at all to getting to play. But really, the most important thing about what you and I have is you used to sit right next to me at Ballers HQ. So I'm just asking, how many days have you cried since I've left?
A lot, man. I'm not going to lie. I do send you messages a lot just saying, hey, man, I miss you, bro. You know, we all got out of that little closet that we had. We've got a much bigger office now. It makes me a little sad because I was like, man, there was like a year where I was just literally feet away from Kyle.
Yeah, it was me, Josh, Jeremy, a.k.a. Al Borland, and Brooks. We were all together in one little small, I don't even know if you'd call it a pod, a closet or whatever, but it was pretty fun, the four of us. And this is kind of where your journey for best ball got started, us sitting next to each other. You know, you'd have questions and we'd get to talk through stuff for people emailing in. But yeah, how did that start for you? Like from going from, hey, I get all these questions about it to I'm going to play best ball now.
I blame you. You are the sole reason that I got into best ball, because I remember talking to you and going like, Kyle, explain DFS to me. I have zero clue what this means. Like, what the heck is best ball? And you were like, do you want to learn? And I just remember being like, will you teach me? And you were like, yeah, man, I'll teach you how to do it. And I was like, I'm in. Let's go.
Right. And for context for people may not realize, like in Arizona, you literally could not play DFS for years there. You could not place a bet in Arizona up until what, 2 years ago. So a lot of the context for footballers and why DFS and betting has kind of become more of part of the culture on the main show, you know, when we do our DraftKings face-off stuff on Friday, we have best ball segments now, is that you can actually play in Arizona. Josh would have had to drive somewhere to actually do it. So yeah, I've kind of given you this outlet, this addiction, and you did pretty well in your first year, man.
I mean, I have to give you kudos for being patient with me, because I'm pretty sure like my first 10 best ball drafts, I was like, Kyle, who would you take right here? Kyle, you're right in the middle of something important. Kyle, it's my pick. Who would you take, man?
And I would probably give some nuanced opinion of, well, yeah, maybe that's the wrong question to ask right now, Josh.
Yeah, you definitely did the teach me to fish. You didn't show me how to fish.
Yeah, and but I like that about our podcast. I think Betts and I both have that kind of background. So what would you say, and what would you give advice to people? And I think this is applicable to anybody. Some people might be listening and saying, hey, I've been playing best ball for a long time. Who cares? Well, I think part of the appeal is getting to bring other friends in, because it's just a different format and a different way to play. If you want to play tournament style, if you want to play just the 12-man league with your friends. But I think it's important to kind of show this format of the game is growing. Underdog has done an amazing job of making sure that this is accessible, that it's clean. So what would you say was the biggest learning curve for you in approaching best ball? And maybe you could share that, you know, other people can share that with people.
Dude, hands down, the hardest thing when starting out as a brand new best ball player is you have to realize it is not redraft. And I'm going into year two on this now, and I still struggle with that a little bit. Like I remember approaching everything as like a lifelong redraft player, and you cannot do that. And it's very, very hard to like unlearn all of the things that you've learned playing redraft over the years and realize that even though this is technically fantasy football, it is completely different in that regard. So like as the great Yoda once said, like, you must unlearn what you have learned.
Well done. And it's been a while since we've had a Yoda quote on here. Because I think a lot of people try to take the same principles of here's what works and here's what's worked for our show, right? Here's what's worked for the fantasy footballers over time. And so I think one of the best ways to explain it, and especially you coming from a gaming and strategy background, is to talk about it in terms of game theory and the opportunity cost. If you do this, Josh, or if you do this, any player, here's what it's going to cost you, which you can't, because in this format, there's no moves, right? Like you can't get somebody off the waiver wire. Did stacking feel normal to you, that concept? Because we talked about that all the time. And I think that at least to you made sense of like, oh, well, I want to stack this player. Did that feel like applicable to you?
It really did, only because I was very lucky in that I had Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill on my dynasty team. And so that stack when Tyreek was on the Chiefs really kind of showed me the benefit in that regard. And then I do remember like you reinforcing that and saying, listen, you know, this is really good because you're kind of doubling up. When things go well, they go really, really well. And that's what you need. You don't need mediocrity. You need things to really kind of explode when things go well for you. So yeah, for me, it was, but it was only by my like natural experience with it.
Yeah, I think one of the key principles is in best ball, you want to get a couple things right. And it sounds so elementary, but like we talk all the time, Betts and I, like, it's just betting on good offenses. And if they roll, the whole team rolls. And sometimes they bring along players that you didn't think that you can get way cheaper in a draft. So what would you say, moving from starting the draft, what were your biggest rookie mistakes that we can dunk on? And we won't mention KJ Hamler.
I knew that was going to come. So don't pick up injured guys that may not play for the year. That's lesson number one. Rookie mistakes for me. I definitely think that even though you want that stack, and honestly, I've done a lot of best ball drafts so far this year, and I'm still a little guilty of this. So it's a difficult thing to break, but like not reaching or forcing that stack is really important. I think like you definitely want it when it happens, but don't make it happen at the detriment of like the rest of your team in that regard. And I find when it's my pick and I'm staring down that draft board and it's like, oh man, I could reach these like 12 to 14 picks and then I'll have the stack. But it's like, man, you're really missing out on some really good opportunity guys as well if you do that.
Yeah, I think the roster construction of figuring out who are the players that are actually going to have the archetype to help my team as opposed to, you know, in redraft, you're stockpiling running backs. You're looking at some of these players. So, for instance, I was looking in the range RB36 to RB43. It's like Rashad Penny, Brian Robinson, Damian Harris, Khalil Herbert. These are players that are going to be rostered everywhere in redraft as a bench player that you can actually hold on to. But in best ball, you're like, I don't know. Like, are these guys going to actually win me a week? Apart from an injury. And so is that kind of like the thing you had to unlearn?
That was one of the best things that I learned. And I actually think where I'd like took a leap forward as a best ball player is in redraft, you want these guys that you can fill in on a bye week, or that if your starter gets hurt, like they'll be serviceable to not tank your team if you have to start them. But in best ball, these middling guys, they do not help you at all. And I remember drafting so many of them in my first year and then just looking at my teams and going, like, I wasted these picks. Like, why did I do this? But that's the redraft thinking. And so, you know, you were very helpful in this, and just an experience of having a year under my belt now is like, you don't want these middling guys on your teams. You want the guys that have the potential to blow up, or maybe they're going to have that week or two where they do blow up, but yeah, these mid-tier guys really don't help out at all.
Yeah, and a lot of those guys are on offenses that we don't love, or at least love their running games. So I think that's part of the issue is like, okay, like, you know, Damian Harris, like, could he be the guy for the Bills? Like, I don't know, maybe. But when you look at Bills running backs, like, they've basically been bottom five in points scored since Josh Allen's been there, since he's their goal line guy. So it's just taking all of that into account when you're looking at a player, not just, oh, I like him, or, oh, he has an opportunity. Like, what's the whole context for it? So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll get to hear about Josh's favorite players for 2023.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The NBA playoffs are here, and we all know playoff mode is a thing. Listen to the evidence. Playoff crowds are going wild. Playoff players are lighting up the court. Even your speakers are in playoff mode. Okay, we'll take it down a notch, but just a notch, because this is the Turn It Up to 11 NBA playoffs. Playoff mode is clearly a thing. The NBA playoffs presented by Google Pixel continue on ABC, ESPN, TNT, and NBA TV.
All right, Josh, I got a couple more questions here for you. And I just love that, you know, Josh and I have talked about this last year even. I was like, Josh, I want to have you on the podcast one day. And I delivered on my promise.
You did. It's not that I didn't bug you probably a dozen or so times about it and just, you know, making sure I was throwing out that reminder here and there for you. But Kyle, you did make it happen. You're a man of your word.
And I'm a scheduled out person. I like a good calendar. So we got it on here. So a couple more questions here. And then Betts and I are going to get to the mailbag. What would you tell somebody, or what would you say, hey, if you have a friend and you're trying to get them in best ball, what would you tell that person who's starting to dip their toes in the best ball waters?
Number one, don't be intimidated. It sounds, for somebody that knows nothing about best ball or DFS, that seems like a world that you just can't really fathom, or it's intimidating, you know, and you hear people talking about it and it's like, don't be. It's very simplistic. In nature, it's very hard to master at that point, but I think anybody can jump in, and it's not nearly as hard as you think it is. The other thing I would say is it is so great for learning how to draft and getting drafts under your belt and getting practice with that as well. So if you're somebody like me where the draft is one of your favorite part of the seasons, best ball is great. get to draft a ton, man. So it's like, you know, there's a lot of benefits. There's a lot of fun to it. But if you're brand new to it, just have fun. Go into it with that mindset, and I think you'll have a great time.
Those of you listening, you're probably like, wow, Josh sounds like a kid that just got to experience on the first. And that's Josh as a whole, as a person. Like, he feels like a big kid. I know you get to share that a lot. But it is that excitement of being able to say, hey, my favorite part of the year, I do it. And then, you know, a lot of times, I remember my home league growing up, it's like, I love the draft. And then 5 minutes later, you're like, oh, man, yeah, it's over. And so I also just want to say it's so great to be able to give people so many different points. There are the serious best ball bros that draft 1,000 times and they put their bank account in there and that's what they do for the season. That's awesome. But we don't have to belittle people who just love playing casually with in 12-man leagues with friends. Like, we have some in the office that we draft between, you know, Jason or Josh is in some, or Brian Ketchern, or just people that are a part of footballers culture that, hey, you know what? Like, we just want to draft together because we're friends. And we like drafting with each other and clowning on picks. And you know what? We'll look at the end of the year and be like, oh, you won. But it's such a great compliment to what you're already doing between Dynasty, Ballers Redraft, and then Best Ball. It kind of gives you a better idea of a player's range of outcomes and access to players that, let's be honest, you're not going to have on all your teams, right? Like, you know, it's Justin Jefferson. If you draw 101, you can get him in Best Ball. But you might never be able to get him in your dynasty league because nobody will trade for him. I get it. And you won't trade him to me. But yeah, it's just a great, great compliment. So for 2023, you've been doing some drafts in best ball. Who are your favorite players at their ADPs?
So I'm more of like a go with your gut instinct kind of guy. You know, this is why I love you, Kyle, because you have numbers to back up everything. Like, you're very statistically minded. So is Betts. And it's really nice to kind of be able to kind of check my gut sometimes on things and be like, am I crazy? But for me in 2023, especially with a lot of the drafts I've been doing, one guy I love is Tua right now. I mean, yeah. I think he is criminally underrated right now. I think his ADP for what he can be, right? We talk about that upside for players and where you can pick them up in best ball. I mean, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, I think there's a very high chance that he can outperform where you're picking him up. So I found that he's usually there when I need a quarterback, and I don't feel bad about drafting him and saying, like, this is a guy I have on my team. I think he's got a lot of upside to him.
Yeah, QB10 right now, 92nd overall. It's one of those places where, you know, you're drafting the elite pass catchers first, and then you can wait on a quarterback. And a lot of times that's how Betts and I talk about stacking, is you go with the wide receiver one first. And a lot of times it's really hard to pay off when you're picking the quarterback first. But with the wide receivers, you can get a backdoor stack that's cheaper. And I think a lot of people, like if they don't have Tyreek or Waddle, they're not going for Tua. Like, there's no tight end there that anybody's trying to stack. There's not really a third option. So it's kind of like, if you have Tyreek or Waddle, you have a cheaper player at Tua that can outperform his ADP. What about at wide receiver? Who do you like?
I actually like two guys this year. Jerry Jeudy, and I know people go, ugh, like, oh, Broncos, yuck. And it's kind of like, Sean Payton is a mastermind, in my opinion. And I think Sean Payton is going to go in there and he is going to fix some of the problems that the Broncos had last year. And I think at his ADP, I think Jeudy has the potential to drastically outperform that with Sean Payton there if he can fix Russell Wilson, which I'm hopeful for. And then the other guy for me is Christian Kirk. Trevor Lawrence, I think, is just going to make another step forward in this. I like the talent of Kirk. Again, where you're picking him up, I think he can outperform that as well. So, again, this is gut feeling guys for me, but those two guys, when they're there and I see them and it's the right time for them, I'm very comfortable picking up either one of those guys.
And I didn't know you were going to say this, but we might be talking about Jeudy later on in this episode because he's one of my highest exposure wide receivers. And then Kirk at wide receiver 27 is a far cry from where he finished last year, wide receiver 11. So yeah, there's a ton of value there. And then give us one running back that you like in terms of upside and where he's going.
You ever have that guy where it just really doesn't make a lot of sense why you like this guy? You know, for me, Rashad White, I think he has a ton of potential. I think he's going to get the opportunity. you know, it's just there's not a lot of reason behind it, to be honest with you. But I see that there is a path for him to, again, outperform where you're going to be able to pick him up. Will he wind up being one of these guys that we said stay away from in their middling? Maybe. But I see an upside there that makes me willing to take that chance, especially at his ADP.
Can I give you some numbers to go with your gut?
Oh, please do, because I'll be honest, I have nothing to back this up.
I actually like it. He's wide receiver, running back 25 right now. So I think he's being drafted at like his floor. He had 50 receptions last year, and he's one of 11 rookie running backs with 50 plus receptions over the last decade. All of those running backs finished as a you know, RB2 or better, except for Nyheim Hines and Duke Johnson, who were just like satellite backs, like didn't get the carries. So if he's the dude, I think it's a good value. I think it's hard for me to click because I want to know, could he finish top 10? But, you know, could Rashad White finish as running back 17? Yeah, I think he could. And you're getting a huge win from running back 25. So I think you're actually pretty smart, Josh.
Oh, I'm saving this clip.
yeah, to take this clip. All right, last question, we'll get you out of here. What are some of the best kept secrets about footballers' Discord? I wanted to give you a chance to just say, hey, this is one of the lifebloods that I think a lot of people don't know about of our company.
It really is, and I get this question all the time. What is Discord? The easiest, simplest way to describe it to somebody is it is like the forums of old, but live in nature. And that doesn't mean it's just a chat room where people are just spamming everything. It's actually very organized and structured. But if you don't know what Discord is, that is basically it in a nutshell. For us, I mean, man, this place is phenomenal. We have the best fantasy football community in the world, man. And that is not over exaggerating. If you want fantasy advice, if you want to give advice, if you want to help people out, if you need to do a gut check like me with some of these guys, you can hop in there and just say, like, am I crazy? This is what I think. And you will get just all kinds of people that are very good at fantasy football that are going to give you some feedback on that. It's really just a fun place, too. People get excited for their drafts. They get excited for the games during the season. It's free to join. It is literally just a click of a link to hop in there and kind of just participate. So check it out. Link is, you know, on our main website, but I can't recommend it enough to people, especially those that don't know what it is. Just give it a chance.
Yeah. And I love that what we do as a company is making sure that people feel like they're getting constant interaction. It drives me crazy sometimes that I see YouTube comments that are like, I wish you guys would talk about this subject. It's like, well, we have it on our website and people are always talking about it on Discord, every single subject. Like, you know, no matter what it is, if it's Dynasty, if it's Superflex, if it's, you know, off topic stuff, whatever, like there's a lot of fun people. And so Josh's goal is to make sure that the community of the Foot Clan are, you know, connected to people. And so also just want to give some love for our moderators, dude. Our mods are awesome. They're always available to, you know, kind of direct people in a great way to go. And you, that's part of your job, is you kind of get to direct that. So Josh, I mean, give them some love.
I got to say, the reason that this community is as great as it is because of the moderation that happens. This is not your toxic online community at all. I mean, people are helping each other out. You know, trolls exist in the world. They get removed instantly if that happens. So it's family friendly as well. So if, you know, if your family plays fantasy football, you know, it's perfect for your kids to be in there. But that is all because of the moderators and the people that make it happen. So yeah, I absolute mad respect for what they do.
Yep. And for this podcast, as the season progresses, you have those premium channels that if you're a Join the Foot member, you know, you get best ball, you get DFS, you get our props. So you get all of those. And it just, I look at questions for this podcast that we're going to do this mailbag first from the Discord. Like, it's, if you want to get a question answered, like, put it here. I guarantee it'll get answered on Discord. It might get lost on Twitter. It will definitely get lost if you're just adding it on the website. But yeah, it's just a great place. So Josh, we're glad you're here. We're glad that you're with us. I'm sorry that I am thousands of miles apart. I'm not sorry that you are baking in the sun right now and you might die. Next time I talk to you, I might be at your grave, me giving you your eulogy.
It's brutal, but Kyle, I'm going to be seeing you in a little over a month too for the League of Record draft.
That's true. We have the Footballers League of Record draft where I am Mike's co-manager. So yeah, we'll get to see you there, but thanks for coming, Josh.
It was a pleasure, buddy.
All right, we're back. And Betts and I are going to make sure we take as much time as possible to answer your listener questions. So let's get into it.
Mailbag.
You can get your questions answered best if you want to get on the Discord. We have our DFS channel, our props channel, where Betts gets to kind of let people know, hey, here's the ones we're taking, including one, Betts, I can't remember. We took a Josh Jacobs one earlier this week, and we got to notify everybody.
Yeah, this was right after the news broke that he was not going to get a contract and that basically it's up to him now whether or not he wants to play on the tag or keep holding out. And we took the under 9.5 rushing touchdowns. Part of that is not just betting on, he had a massive workload last year. And typically when that happens for guys, the year after they see a drop. But we're pretty into fading the Raiders this year just as a team outlook. And so it makes a lot of sense to correlate those. And then there's a lot of data from what I've done for studies showing that guys that miss time in camp, significant time, tend to be higher risks for injury and also don't outperform their ADP. So it's a big bet against all those things. He could report next week and this all looks silly in hindsight, but we'll take the under and hope for the best.
Yeah. Join the Foot members, kind of get access to Discord, and you get also access if you get the Ultimate Draft Kit Plus, which has the DFS pass and access to our props and in-season props and betting and all those things. So you get notified if you're part of that group. But the Discord is where we're going to take a lot of these questions. So I try to give priority to those people because they're active. And I will say our best ball channel is the one that is the most active apart from just dynasty channels right now on the Fantasy Footballers Discord. So if you're posting a team, I see people all the time say, hey, I'm at this pick. I'm considering these two players. What do you think? And you'll get five or six people to jump in there. So it's pretty wild. But this first question is from Discord. Who is the player that surprises you the most when looking at your exposures, whether it's how few shares you have or how many? So, Betts, I'll let you start.
Yeah, so I'll split this up into two different sites where I mostly draft is Underdog and on DraftKings a little bit. So on Underdog, I saw 20% next to Chris Godwin's name, and I thought that might feel like a little bit too much considering the state of the Bucks, their team total, Baker Mayfield, et cetera. I was drafting him a ton back when he would drop routinely into like late round six. So this is, I think, more of an early season take. I haven't been taking him too much. But then as far as someone that I was like, whoa, that's not enough. 3% Brandon Ayuk right now to me doesn't feel like something I want to head into the season with. So I will be purposely trying to get that up as the summer goes on. And then over on DraftKings, Kyle, I have 30% Corey Davis.
Oh, man.
And that sounds ridiculous, which it is. But these drafts, you know, mind you, they're 20 rounds instead of 18. And I'm in drafts where, like, dude, in round 20, Corey Davis is just sitting there. And this is this is on purpose for me. I actually want a ton of Corey Davis on DraftKings because he's going to make the roster. He will play. Will he have 400 yards and four touchdowns? Yeah, probably. Won't be that great, but he'll give you a couple weeks. And the guys that are going around 20 next to him are giving you zeros most of the time. So Corey Davis in round 19, round 20 on DraftKings, I think, is a good pick. And then on DraftKings, I kind of feel fortunate about this. It wasn't purposeful. Only 3% Saquon Barkley. I think it's more of just where he goes sort of thing. I prefer other players. And oftentimes with the full PPR scoring, I'm trying to do hero or zero RB builds and just load up on wide receiver.
Yeah, Corey Davis, I don't mind it, especially, you know, for some people, they're like, hey, that's a lot, especially when you think about Underdog and you're only drafting 18 rounds. But the couple extra rounds, you can make sure that you get a player that's going to be live at the end of the year as opposed to a lot of these guys which are just going to airball. I want to go back to Chris Godwin because you said 20% feels like a lot. I think you're not worried about him and his target share. Like he was targeted on 22% of his routes last year, which is pretty great considering he was coming off an ACL. But we know this passing game is going to crater, not just in efficiency probably from Brady to Baker, but just in total volume. I mean, they passed the ball 751 times last year. That was over 45 a game. In our UDK, the projection is 33 per game. So I could see 150 pass attempts being shaved off this pie for this team. So that's where Godwin made his mark, is just pure volume. So let's say Godwin goes from, I don't know, 8 targets a game to 6.5 or 7. It changes a lot because he's never really been a huge touchdown guy the last couple of years. So does it feel bad because it's a half PPR site with him.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was saying, is like, it doesn't feel like a league winning sort of pick in that range. And so this is kind of an early season stance I had, where I was like, he's underpriced. I know it's not going to be incredible with the Bucks and Baker, but these guys are so talented that in round six, like, I'm taking Chris Godwin. So now that he's kind of back up into like the mid 50s in ADP, I've certainly selected other players over him. So I think this overall, when we get to week one, will come down quite a bit. And I'll be purposeful to try to get that exposure maybe closer to like 15%, something like that, by the time week one kicks off.
I was shocked that Jerry Jeudy is at 22% for me. And I like Jerry Jeudy a lot. And obviously, I think I've been taking more Russ than most people just because he's so cheap as a QB2. But Jerry Jeudy had a couple of monster games, including that 3-touchdown game against the Chiefs. The back half of the year was so much better. So it's hard for me because this offense, you can say I went into like, it can't be as bad as it was last year. And yet I also think it could just be pretty much the same. And at the end of the day, I'm like, is he going to help my team? Right now, Jerry Jeudy is going as wide receiver 20, 39th off the board. So beginning of the fourth round, I don't mind the price. When you look at the other wide receivers around him, Christian Watson, Drake London, DeAndre Hopkins, Terry McLaurin, like, I'm fine with that tier and where he goes. And over the last decade, if you were a first-round wide receiver, so drafted in the NFL draft, in your age 24 season, you're going to average 8 targets a game. So if I knew I was getting 8 targets a game from Jerry Jeudy as my wide receiver 2 or 3 in best ball, I feel pretty good, but I have very little exposure to Cortland Sutton at all. And maybe it's just, I think he's just going to airball and it doesn't matter. But is that too bullish? I don't know what your exposures are for Jeudy, but is that a little too overweight considering there's other guys there that maybe have better touchdown upside?
I don't know the exact number of where I'm at on him, but it's nowhere close to this. Like, I'd be surprised if it's north of 10%. I feel like the tough part with Jeudy is a fourth round pick to me feels very expensive for a guy like this who just kind of keeps living off of previous first round great route runner hype. Like, he's been fine in the NFL, but he hasn't really done anything incredible. But because the landscape is so different this year compared to previous years, like, you just kind of have to bite the bullet, and like, that's where the wide receivers go, right? So I understand it in that aspect. But yeah, as far as Jeudy versus Sutton, like, we've talked a lot about this. If you just look at both players last year and use the same metrics, you know, targets per route run, yards per route run, you know, success rate, stuff like that, like, these guys play with the same quarterback in the same scheme, and Judy's numbers are way better than Cortland Sutton. So I understand why he's going ahead of him. I'm just questioning, like, is there that big of a difference? Is there like a 6 or 7 round difference between these players? You know, and I don't know. Maybe it is when we come back at the end of the season, but I think that discrepancy is massive, and you're already making the bet that Russell Wilson is not terrible when you take Jeudy, and people are willing to say Cortland Sutton's just done. I don't want him. So I feel like I understand why he goes higher, but I don't think the discrepancy between those two players should be what it is. And, you know, my exposure probably will be pretty in line with like a neutral stand on Jerry Jeudy by the end of the year. And part of the reason I don't get a lot of him, truthfully, is because I want to stack the Chargers. And because of where they go in their ADPs, it's very tough to build, you know, like a Keenan, Mike, and Herbert stack, and then also have him as a bring back for week 17. You can't get them all because they're ADP. So that's probably why I don't have as much Jerry Jeudy. But yeah, lots to think about with him for sure.
I have some teams that are Eckler, and then I took Jeudy in the fourth. So that's kind of like where I've got some correlation. It's tough with Jeudy because you can look at so many metrics. Like, I see this one all the time, and it's super fun if you watch film. Jerry Jeudy gets man coverage is a cheat code in the NFL. Like, he led all wide receivers in yards per route run against the coverage. He's open. We talked about his route running. Like, the dude sees like 20 targets a year against man coverage. Like, it's a pretty small sample size to be able to just use that stat alone. Teams are not stupid. They're not going to only throw man coverage at Jerry Jeudy. They're going to say, hey, Russ, can you beat us a different way? So, and then the last thing I'll say about the Chargers, you mentioned them. I have way more Keenan Allen than I feel comfortable with. And I know that of all people, I'm saying that. But considering that
I, for one, am shocked.
But for best ball, because Justin Herbert is somebody that we've taken a stand on across the board, he's top three in my quarterback exposures. I'm assuming he's up there with you in top three.
Number one.
So, number one? Wow.
I'm all in, baby.
It's sad when I look at the other wide receivers. Big Mike, I'm only at 8%. Quentin Johnson, I'm only at 6%. So is yours kind of reversed where you have more of the other two?
I have more of the other two than Keenan Allen. And I was actually taking a lot of Keenan earlier. 35th overall feels very expensive for a player that last year people were saying like, well, he's getting up there in age. And now everyone's just like, who cares, right? Like, it feels very expensive for Keenan Allen, who I love, but on underdog, half PPR has never really been that touchdown type of guy. So I have pretty equal exposure to Big Mike and Quentin Johnson. And then Keenan's actually my third of the trio. I like Quentin Johnson where he goes. And I like the bet because he's a guy that he could, like, there's outs where he hits, right? He could just be awesome in the back half of the year as rookie wide receivers tend to be. And he could be what you need down the stretch just in and of himself. Or he has contingent upside if either Mike Williams or Keenan Allen miss time, which those guys have been known to do. So I like the Quentin Johnson bet based off of those factors and his draft capital.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Right now, wide receiver 42, there's just lots of different paths for him. So I think that's probably, it's a good question to look at your exposures and say, hey, I don't need, it doesn't mean I'm never going to take Keenan Allen again. It's just that with Quentin Johnson, there's a lot of room for upside and a lot of room for me to take other players where I was taking Keenan Allen.
Yeah,
next question.
Real quick, Kyle, before we move on, for listeners, I think this is an important thing to do that not a lot of people actually take time to do is review your exposures and just ask yourself, like, is that purposeful or do I actually want to do this or not? Because sometimes you'll look at a player and you're like, why do I have 35%, I don't know, Zay Flowers, right? It's like, well, I didn't really plan to do that. Or maybe you did, but I don't really plan to do that. So I need to make sure I'm taking some more Odell, take a little bit more Bateman and just kind of balance it out or whatever the player is for you. But I feel like people get stuck in the trap of like, here's who I take in round five. Here's who I always take in round six. And then all of a sudden you're stuck at the end of the year and you're like, huh, that guy smashed and I had almost none of him. And that wasn't on purpose. So just make sure your exposures, I would say, match what you actually want to do.
The next question is from Brock on Discord. He says, can I have some clarity on optimal stacking? And if you're one of those sick individuals that said, hey, who could forget the June 9th episode of this podcast, Best Ball Stacking Plus Strategy Birthday Dads? I mean, what an episode. I remember it very vividly. I don't. And that was six episodes ago. If you want to go back, you can listen to that episode. But I think one of the things we've tried to emphasize is optimal stacking in best ball isn't just, especially in tournament play, isn't just, hey, I've got a quarterback and a wide receiver. I checked that off the list. I got a stack of mine. It's like, okay, Herbert and, you know, Quentin Johnson, that's going to show up in a lot of different tournament lineups. Even in a 12-person league, it's like, yes, everybody's stacking. In general, like 11 out of 12 teams are going to have at least one stack. And most people are at the point now where they're reaching and they probably have two to three on their team. So let's talk more about the optimal and why we've kind of leaned more into like three to five teammates.
Yeah, that's been kind of shown to be the best in terms of the advance rate for teams over the last couple of years when you compare them to teams that went with just a single stack, you know, one quarterback and a pass catcher, or people that went way overboard and stacked like eight different players from the same team. You can do too much, and that example is too much. And it's not that if you single stack, it's bad. It's just that you're not really having as much correlation as is optimal, or that's what the data has shown. So we try to live in that kind of three to five teammates range. It's not that you should go into every draft and say, this is what I have to do every time, but you should have it in the back of your mind of like, hey, I'm on the clock. I already have two Chargers. You know, I've got a decision here between Quentin Johnson and Gabe Davis. Like, you should probably just bet on the Chargers. You're already making the bet that they have a good season. So when you increase the correlation by adding a teammate, the chances are that you're hitting on multiple guys. So that's kind of one way that I would think about it. And then the other thing is, we've talked a lot about, you know, people always ask, like, what happens if I don't get my quarterback stack? Like, am I just done? And in some ways, it doesn't feel good, right? It's like, well, I had this plan. I had these pass catchers. Someone, you know, I was able to start Jamar Chase and T. Higgins, and someone took Joe Burrow four spots ahead of ADP for zero reason. People always do that, right? Doesn't mean your team's done. You're already betting on the Bengals pass catchers doing well because you correlate their teammates. If you get into week 15, 16, 17, you advance to the playoffs for tournaments, like you're the teams that have just Joe Burrow, if they somehow squeak through, they're not advancing. In those tournament rounds, you need to have that, and you're already making the bet. So if you can make up the quarterback points later, get a secondary stack, you know, a third stack, something like that with your other quarterbacks, you're still okay. You're still in the clear. So I'm just trying to build correlation wherever I can in my lineup, whether it's with the quarterback or not.
Yeah, think about the Cowboys. Like CeeDee Lamb is an early pick. And if you wanted to get Tony Pollard in the second, third round, you can get it. But then the other options with Dallas are way cheaper. Brandon Cooks, Dax at 106, and then my highest exposure wide receiver, which you can punch me if you think I'm dumb, but it's okay. Michael Gallup goes way later. But let's say you're in a tournament format. And we're going to talk more about 12-man formats in just a second, because I think a lot of people are like, you guys only talk about tournaments, but it's where we get all of our data from, the big set. But like, let's say CeeDee Lamb Dak is like an awesome stack in week 15, okay? And so teams that have that advance further, but then you have another piece of this offense where Michael Gallup, we've seen him have those two touchdown games and blow up. He could be the guy the next week, and you have a different roster construction than just the person said, hey, I've got Dak and CeeDee and I'm done. So we're betting on offenses that can roll, and we're betting on teams that can bring along multiple players. That's the only reason I care about the Broncos, is there's cheaper players on the team than I think what they can be. Same thing with Greg D, Marvin Mims. Like, these are players that are so cheap that you can bring along an extra piece, Samaje Perine, that can beat their ADP for this team, and you end up having three or four Broncos on a team. Now, some people might be vomiting that you'd even think about that, but there's enough unknown and upside that we've seen from Russ and Sean Payton to say, yeah, there's room for this team to be, I don't know, is there room for the Broncos to be a top 15 offense?
I think so. Top 10? I don't think so. But can they be top half of the league and just be competent, which they were not last year? Certainly. So yeah, I mean, we've talked about it before, just the injuries that they dealt with. The offensive line was just destroyed and Russ, you know, crumbled under pressure. So if they can get that sorted out and Sean Payton makes life simple, which I think he will, yeah, they can be a top 20, top 15 offense, and compared to where they're going, you know, that would be potentially profitable.
Next question is from Samuel White on Discord. I know Kyle has mentioned it before, but it now looks like both of you are fairly in on Aaron Jones, which I've been pretty vocal about this. I wouldn't say you've been down about him, but you were more like at market for a while. He said, so you guys are in on Aaron Jones while AJ Dillon is still in line with ADP. Why should I take Jones when I can get Dillon later? The opportunity cost is massive. So think about this in best ball. It doesn't always have to work in a way, especially with running backs, where it's just binary. If you don't take Jones, then you take Dillon. Or if you take Dillon, you know, vice versa. It can work where both of these guys are good. Like, it's totally possible. In fact, they have been good together. That's actually what we've seen in the past, where they've both beaten their ADP. In fact, what I did is I looked at over the last decade when running back teammates saw 200 plus touches each. Okay. So that's what you're getting. You're getting two running backs that have stayed relatively healthy. They've each had 200 touches. All of these running backs ended up in the top 24. Every single one of those duos. And the best part is the second running back usually outperformed their ADP because they're getting 200 plus touches for an RB2. So there is room for both of these guys to be good. I personally will not be drafting them together because I don't think that makes much sense. I do like Aaron Jones just for the pass catching work, and this team scored 13 fewer touchdowns than the year before, so I think they're due for some positive touchdown regression. But I love AJ Dillon. I think he's a great choice. I like him a lot in weekly winners, where if Jones is out, we've seen Dillon have these monster games where they just ride him, and with this offense, maybe they lean on the run a little bit more. I mean, the Packers, apart from Jordan Love, are, I think, a really good, they have a good roster, especially on defense. I think they're solid. So I like both these players, and it's possible for you to invest in both in different formats.
Yeah, I think that was pretty well said. Just to kind of add a couple more context pieces to it, you mentioned like they've got a good defense, you know, they've got Jordan Love, so it makes sense that they lean on these running backs. I think that is 100% what their plan is going to be, because when you look at the depth chart, they've got, you know, rookies all over the wide receiver depth chart. Their tight end is a rookie, and Christian Watson basically played half a season last year down the stretch. Now, it was incredibly outlier efficient. I think that comes down. He's still, I would say, a little bit inexperienced as a player. So you have just so many question marks at wide receiver, tight end, and quarterback. Matt LaFleur, if you listen to the Play Callers with Jordan Rodrigue, the podcast yes. from The Athletic, it was so good. If you like football, listen to that. But like, he is a smart man. The guy knows these are probably his two best playmakers on offense. And PFF has this offensive line ranked eighth heading into the season. So I think it's very reasonable to expect this offense to flow through the Packers running backs. I like them both. I agree, though, as far as where Jones goes, I like the A.J. Dillon bet just a little better because the opportunity cost is less. And I like hitting wide receiver in that round 4 or 5 range. That's just my personal preference. Doesn't mean I won't have any Aaron Jones. It's just I'll have more A.J. Dillon. But when you're thinking about these guys as well, we need to give the downside case. And Jordan Love might just be terrible. And this offense might not be in the red zone enough for it to actually matter, right? They've got a 7.5 win total. They're tied with Chicago for the longest odds to win the division. The no on their yes or no for playoffs is -210 to the no. So Vegas is kind of telling us this team might not be that good. But when you think about where they go on opportunity cost, it's kind of baked in. So I'm fine with both guys. I like A.J. Dillon because of where he goes relative to Aaron Jones, excuse me. But there's a lot to think about with these two guys for sure, because we've loved them for years, you know, on end. And now Aaron Jones turns 29 in December. So there's a lot happening with these two guys.
Yeah, and A.J. Dillon's in a contract year, so it's about to be different. The Packers did move from 5-1 to 4-1 to win the division. So they're in a spot where it's like, hey, you could I think they're fine. I think that they were a good bet, and I think they're still a fine bet. Like any of those teams we said when we previewed could win that division. It's not shocking. But yeah, Jordan Love, I can't really give my educated opinion on what he is yet.
Have you taken him at all?
Jordan Love?
Yeah.
I have a vivid memory of taking a team, I think it's in Best Ball Mania, and I titled it, because you know you can change the title of your team's an underdog, as just crappy QBs, and he's like my third quarterback or whatever on that team. But other than that, I don't think I've really taken him at all.
Love it. Yeah, there's times where I'll have one of these running backs and like, you know, Jaden Reed's sticking around or something, and then like Jordan Love's just staring you in the face like 20 spots after ADP, and it's like, all right, I guess we're doing this. So I have a little bit of him, but I'm a little worried about the Packers offense. I'll be honest.
It's hard to draft. Like I can't click the button for Romeo Doubs as a difference making player in best ball. I get the case for Christian Watson. I'm probably a lot lower than most people on him, but I get it. I understand the tight ends. Who knows? There's no way I'm just like investing in Luke Musgrave and Tucker Kraft, Josiah DeGuerra, the boys. Like, no, it's like, so it's a weird team to be able to invest in outside of the running backs. Next question from Discord is from B. Dysert. A vast majority of content seems to be centered on tournament style best ball contests. So is there some cash style contest strategy you could discuss? There seems to be some differences between optimal strategies. Would love to hear any thoughts you guys have about sit and goes and 3-person drafts. So in other words, leagues that we would not identify as having a giant prize pool, a guaranteed, like, okay, here's how many contestants. It's like your sit and goes. Keep in mind this. These are the exact same style of scoring. The format's the exact same. So whether you are playing in weekly winners or best ball mania or a sit and go, your team still scores the same amount of points. Okay, so just in terms of how it's structured. So in that sense, our best ball principles are not that different than what we've always discussed in terms of, here's how teams score. Here's the wide receivers you need in this league. Now, when you get to 3-man, we've talked about this in the past. Like, this is where you get to box out people if you want in 3-man leagues. And I love doing that at the beginning. A lot of people will say, I'm going to take Kelce and Andrews and just box out everyone else. That's totally fine because there are an insane amount of wide receivers that you can load up in later if you want to go that route. Same thing with running backs. Like, you're going to see the running back 20. Like not even be drafted in 3-man leagues a lot of the time. So keep that in mind in just how it's structured. But I wouldn't say I like throw out the door how I generally play best ball. Like I'm taking my strategies of how I look at players, them beating their ADP, but I'm also not trying to get so nuts about, you know, going off the board. I think my best advice is I just invest in good offenses and I'm not trying to get too cute in sit and goes.
Yeah, and a lot of the data that we share, there's some stuff that we do for like the playoff advance rate, but just when you think about advance rate or win rate, you hear those terms a lot. That is the teams that finish in the top two of a 12-man league. That's what that data is telling us. And so this is the exact same. You want to finish in the top two, top three of your league. So a lot of those principles, like Kyle was talking about with stacking, make a ton of sense no matter what sort of format you're playing. The only thing that doesn't matter, in my opinion, for this style versus a tournament is the week 17 stuff, or if you're really going down the rabbit hole of week 16 stacking and week 15 stack, don't worry about that. But the other stuff of stacking your quarterback, stacking your players, and betting on good offenses is really what it's all about.
Yeah, I would just keep in mind, like, advance rate is a term that we talk about a lot, and I have some articles out on the site discussing, like, okay, what makes a player have a good advance rate? It's a combination of their ADP, what the rest of the position does, and just betting. So, like, Miles Sanders last year. Miles Sanders was awesome. He had a 32% advance rate. He was a great pick in every single format. Didn't really matter because of where he was going. I think he was like 83rd overall, something like that. It's like the principle was betting on a player who's undervalued that has a chance for touchdowns and a good offense. And sometimes those things don't work out, but in every single league, if he got you to week 14, Miles Sanders would have blown the door. Same thing with Josh Jacobs, whoever. So we have some articles of just general best ball strategy and roster construction. I think the roster construction stuff is pretty much the same. Like, you know, do you have a 2-6, 2-6-8-3 or whatever you're doing for your roster, 2-6-8-2. Just think out that. So roster construction is pretty much the same. Next question from PMA Yankees on Discord. If you look at historical data, how often are the pots, quote, split multiple ways where we should worry about getting different? Some player stacking pairings are natural to get ADP, like, you know, Lamar, Andrews, Herbert, Keenan Allen. Are you just hammering those away because we know stacks are good, or do you place a large emphasis on getting different to avoid chalk and duplicating? I'm going to give you some numbers here, Betts, because I nerded out on this for a while.
Of course you did.
So duplicating, we talk about that a lot in, you know, in DFS. Like, okay, do you have a dupe lineup? Like, does somebody else have this same exact lineup? I just want to say this before we get any further. When we play cash and we play further on in the season, like when you get to like week 9 or week 10, there will be so many lineups that get duplicated in cash. And every week you would get messages like, how did this person have the same lineup? It's like, well, the people that are sticking around playing DFS in week 10, they know what the optimal plays are. So like it comes down to there's probably like 6 plays that everybody pretty much has. And then the 2 or 3 other people, you get a little different. Like, so lineups get duplicated more than you think. I think a lot of I used to have like conspiracy theory people come to me like, oh, this person's looking at mine and they have a program. It's like, dude, like there's like 6 plays that everybody's playing this week. There's a cheap, you know, cheap running back. So duplication happens more than you think. In best ball, I think people are scared in weekly winners or in best ball mania, like, oh, what if I have the same exact lineup? I want to get really different. I get that. In best ball mania 3, there were, you know, 560 plus thousand lineups. Okay. From weeks 1 to 14, the total duplicated lineups only exceeded 0.1% once the entire year. Okay. So it doesn't happen because of how many combinations, and your brain will start to hurt when you think of the permutations of 18 players and the possible combinations of getting that lineup each week. So it doesn't happen. In weekly winners, let's say you had a roster of 2-6-8-2. Okay, so that's like, you know, 2 quarterbacks, 6 running backs, 8 wide receivers, and 2 tight ends. The possible combinations for that lineup is almost 18,000 different combinations for just that lineup. And then you mix in, you know, instead of Mark Andrews, you know, you pick somebody else at tight end. Like, it changes so much. So my point of saying this, and when you go to weekly winners, you go to anything else, there are billions of lineup combinations. So I'm not really worried, and I'm not drafting as if, oh no, somebody else is going to have the same exact lineup, because yes, everybody could have Herbert, Allen, Mike Williams, but there's probably going to be another 10 different players they have on their roster that make it different. So I don't know. I don't want to get too much in the weeds of all that stuff, but I did want to give some numbers just to give people a frame of reference.
Yeah, I mean, you will drive yourself absolutely crazy if you try to avoid certain players, combinations, stacks, because someone else might have it. Like, it is what it is, but because there's so much variance, especially when you get past round 10 of and I would say maybe like round 12, round 13 is probably better, of you'll see guys fall in ADP because people want their stacks or they have different player takes about here. And so because of that ADP variance that happens later in the draft, the combinations that you have versus someone else, even if you have the same, you know, a few, four, like three, four guys at the start of your draft that someone else has, your roster is going to be vastly different when you get to round 15, 16 and beyond. So I would not worry about it whatsoever. And I keep making this example of like, you know, CD and Amon-Ra go at the 1-2 turn. It's very common that you can pair them up. And then you look later and you're like, oh, cool. Like Jahmyr Gibbs is kind of there, you know, in round three, like right at the round 3-4 turn. You might think to yourself, I shouldn't take that combination because everyone's going to know that. Dude, people, and I'm telling you this 100%, people do not, like the bubble on Twitter and the bubble of people listening to podcasts that are entering this type of stuff, it's smaller than you think. And it's big, don't get me wrong, but it's smaller than you think. People do sorts of silly stuff where it's like, yeah, I would just take Jahmyr Gibbs in that situation. I'm betting on Amon-Ra, I'm betting on the Lions, like that makes sense. People will reach and grab, I don't know, Christian Watson or something like that, which I'm not saying is bad. It's just people are not thinking about it the way we are. So don't go crazy. Draft good teams, stack, correlate, and kind of let the chips fall where they may.
Best ball is a great social experiment when you mix in Twitter and YouTube and everything else because, yeah, you're inundated with information that people think there is just this echo chamber of just so many people. When reality, you start zooming out, like, one, there's overlap of podcasts, but there's also like people just drafting all the time. Like I have friends that love best ball. They listen to this podcast, of course, because they're my friend, but like they're not on Twitter, right? They're not just like sitting around. They don't know about certain personalities in the fantasy industry. It's a different world. There is fantasy football, there's fantasy football Twitter world, and then there's another degeneracy level of people that talk about football and betting and stuff like that all summer. That's you people. I get it. So it's just realize what's going on.
You are one of us.
It's also like we'll never know. You're drafting blindly. Like when you're drafting, you can have some information of what people tweeted out, but I don't have a giant database right now that tells me, hey, so far this summer, CeeDee Lamb and Amon-Ra have been drafted together in, I don't know, 8% of drafts. I don't have that in front of me. Nobody does. They can have a set of what they have and what they simulate, but we don't really know. So keep that in mind. We're drafting with what we think, and there's just so many unknowns. So don't worry about being duplicated. Next question, and we've gotten this one before, but it's a fun one to bring up. What's your favorite DFS / best ball / betting memory, and why is it bets playing Jamal Agnew in a GPP?
I've done that a time or two, specifically on Showdown, and it has worked out. I've got a couple that really come to mind, but the one that I think is my favorite, just to think back on, the game was so fun for everyone. If you were a football fan and you watched Chiefs-Bills in the playoffs a couple years ago, it was incredible. But that was a week where I took a huge stand on Gabe Davis. Thank goodness. That worked out extremely well. So that was a very fun evening to watch that all play out and climb the leaderboard. So good night on whatever divisional round or which one was that? Championship round? I can't remember.
It was divisional.
Yeah. What a game, though.
Yeah. That was fun because as it progressed, you know, you had Gabe Davis and it just kept getting better and better. Like usually... Just for people to know, in DFS, you start out hot and then somebody else comes up and just takes your money because, you know, that's just that afternoon slate or something else. So it's like, I always get weary when I'm ahead early where I'm like, oh, this is going really well. I'm like, I know how this works. I know the end of the story. It's funny, when this question was out there, like my funny memories come out to me of just like betting on like players that like didn't work out. And maybe that's just my personality. Like it's fun that I can take this lightly. You know, I'm not trying to bet as my livelihood. I have a real job that supports my family. My best memory that comes to mind is like in my first year or two, I won a GPP thanks to JJ Nelson. I don't know if you remember, like toothpick wide receiver for the Cardinals, like had a monster game, best game of his life. And he was rostered like stupid small percent. So he will always be attached to me in DFS. A couple years ago, I played Josh Allen, which sounds silly now, but like he had done nothing the first couple weeks, and he just broke the slate. It was against Washington. And then one that came to my mind was two Super Bowls ago when you and I, on this podcast, laid out a 9-leg parlay that we needed 6 more Joe Burrow rushing yards to hit.
That would have been legendary. Yes, I remember. It still hurts.
It was great, though, because I think a lot of people that rode with us were like, that was so fun. I didn't win, but I was so close. And I mean, a nine-leg parlay, let's be honest. We probably prefaced like, this is stupid, but here's what we think and here's our reasons. And anyway, 6 rushing yards, man. That's all he needed. 6 more. Okay, I'm going to give us a couple more questions before we get out of here. This next one's from Really I Own. I'm going to mess up this name. It's a really long name on Twitter. You guys always mention being overweight or underweight on players. What percentage would you consider that to be? And are you accounting for tournaments only or 12-man leagues?
So for me, I kind of use across the entire spectrum of where I draft, whether it's tournaments or not. And, you know, when you look at this, in theory, you have a 1 in 12 chance to draft a player. Now, that's not really accurate because if you draw the 10 spot, you're not getting Justin Jefferson. 0% chance that happens. But in theory, you have a 1 in 12 chance because there's 12 people in your league, which is about 8%. So I kind of use that as my rough outline of like, if I'm above that, I'm overweight. If I'm below it, you know, I'm underweight. So like above 10%, overweight, above 15%, I'm purposely making a big stand on a certain player or a team. And for me, if I'm below like 5%, that's kind of where I'm looking at my specific fades.
And it obviously matters how much volume you're playing. I mean, there's some people,
right,
they share their screenshots, they're drafting thousands of times. I'm just going to let you know that is not me. I won't be doing that this summer. But yeah, I think that's a good rule of thumb. If I get above 20%, that's when I get worried, like, oh, am I meaning to do this? That's why Jerry Jeudy, when I was at 22%, I was like, oh, wow, I like Jerry Jeudy this year. And I get, but that feels way stronger than I would have thought. I would have put him more like at 16%, 17%. But 22% felt like a lot. I will not tell you how much Michael Gallup I have, though. I'm not allowed to say that.
Ooh, can I guess?
I don't know. I'm going to go look it up, but yeah, guess.
Oh, let's see if I'm right after the show. I think it's going to be around 31%.
That's 34%. I just looked it up. God. Okay. He's so cheap.
He was so cheap. Now he's starting to climb up.
No, Michael Gallup. He's what? Wide receiver 61. That's nothing.
But I looked at a draft. Which, you should do this, listener. It's really fun to do. Like, go back and check out some drafts that you did maybe in like May or something and like be like, wow, that guy was really going at that ADP. Dude, I had like a team that Michael Gallup was like 170 or something ridiculous like that ADP wise. So he has climbed. As your friend, I would say maybe consider bringing that down a little bit.
Backing up. He's at 135 right now. So it was me. I could just say I was the one that was pushing him up. Like, wow.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah. Well, it's also fun because you get to look at players that we talked about, Madison or Joe Mixon, who were some of my strongest stances of running backs. Like, oh, I could draft Madison at like pick 80 something way back in the day, or Mixon in the 60s. Last question from Steve12768 on Twitter, because all the other Steves in the world took 12767. They just Steves, man. A lot of them out there. If you have Tua, how do you feel about handcuffing Mike White with a last pick? I think he's a great backup, and last year he finishes the QB6 and QB7 in two of his games with some monster games, including a game back in 2021 where he had 405 and a 3-touchdown game. So what are your thoughts on handcuffing in best ball Mike White?
I would not be doing this personally, because if you are making the bet on Tua, you are making the bet that Tua is good. He stays healthy. Tyreek and Waddle are good and stay healthy. And if those guys are going down, like, your team's probably not advancing, or if this is a normal 12-man league, probably not winning, because you're wasting and you're taking a zero every single week that Tua is healthy on Mike White. And there's a lot of data showing like zeros really do hurt your team, especially when you get into these large field tournaments. So I would not be doing this. I would just make the bet as is. We talk about it all the time. Draft as if you're right. And if you're taking Tua, you're drafting him as if he stays healthy and he has a good season.
Yeah. Now in weekly winners, if you want to get really weird, if you have a super Miami stack and you say, hey, I'm going to draft Tua and Mike White and that's it, and you just say no one else is going to have it, I'm fine. I'm like, I don't think that's insane. The problem is Mike White doesn't really fit a 3-quarterback build, in my opinion, in just any best ball. Definitely not. I would definitely not be thinking about Mike White in any sit and go, any 12-man league. No way. It's just not worth it. In a massive tournament what you're saying for this to hit is that Tua is healthy, he's awesome, and then in the playoffs, Mike White is the dude weeks, you know, 15, 16, 17 or something, and nobody else has him and you do, and all those Tua teams that got there, you know, now don't have him and you're the only one. It's like there are so many things that have to go right for that to even work. For your team to get there, you need like a four quarterback build for that team, which is just terrible in the advance rate. So in my opinion, it's weekly winners would be the only place I'd like maybe do that for fun, but I don't think this is good. And you're assuming that Mike White is good and the offense is just as efficient, which I think is not going to happen. Mike White survived on just pure volume. I mean, the Jets were just throwing the ball, what, like 40 something times a game. It was, that's what you're surviving on. And just to give you a stat, last year, you might say like, oh, well, the Dolphins can work with any quarterback. When Tua was out, okay, Waddle and Tyreek combined for zero touchdowns in those games. So don't just think like, okay, the offense was fine. Like it was putrid with Skylar Thompson and whatever else, Teddy B. So Mike White's a fun player and weekly winners would be the only. Is that the only galaxy brain you would do?
I don't even think I would do it then personally. I mean, because you're competing with how, I don't even know how many entrants are in weekly winners, but obviously in like Best Ball Mania, it's like 670,000. Like you're competing with teams that have, that get to the finals or week 16 with Mahomes, Allen, Hurts, like those guys will be there. And the chances of Mike White teams beating those teams just feels incredibly thin. So I personally would not be doing this in any format.
Yeah. 261,000 is in weekly winners. You know what? I think I've talked myself into, if I want to, if I'm doing only a Dolphin stack, I will throw it in there. But I haven't done that yet.
Kyle,
so
you are a sick individual.
Thank you. That's one of the nicest things that you could say to me. And I feel like the people understand that I just want to be here for the people. So
yeah, of course.
That's going to do it for this episode. Betts and I will be back next week to talk best ball ADP changes, to get more into it. We've got a ton of content on the site. Our best ball primer, best ball rankings are always updated. If you want to get in on that, ultimatedraftkit.com. Betts, sign us off.
Yes, sir. I'm excited for that show next week because we're going to talk about players that have risen in ADP, fallen in ADP, what to do with them now, because that's a big important factor for Best Ball Mania, DraftKings Millie, stuff like that. Have a great weekend. We're back next week. We'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to another edition of the Fantasy Footballers DFS and Betting Podcast. Don't forget to visit us on the web at thefantasyfootballers.com.